The topic is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Inevitable Time. As we know from reading Bhagavad Gita, there are five primary topics in Bhagavad Gita. And the one that's most difficult to get a handle on is time. And it's spoken about least, but it is so important. When we hear about the topic of Sarga, the creation of Lord Vishnu, there's no creation without material nature. There's no creation without the Lord. There's no creation without Prakriti. And there's no creation without time. And time in combination with all those awakens the temporary one, karma. That's the five topics. But how time works is fascinating and not so easy to understand. But we find some description of time in Canto 1, Chapter 9. If you want to take a look at the verses we're going to be reading, starting from text 11. So whoever's got that on their screen can move it to text 11. Bhishma Dev is one of our 12 Mahajans, great authorities, and he's in a very compromised position. He's about to depart this world. Of course, he was given, we know this history from Mahabharata, he was given benediction from his father. Father must have been very powerful to give such a benediction. But he didn't have to give up his body unless he chose to. That could be a problem or could be a benediction. Depends. His bodies get old. Markandeya Rishi had been this benediction that he would live three cycles of the four yugas, and that was a problem when it came to in between the partial devastation period. He was in a problem. Anyway, so Bhishma Dev is lying in a bed of arrows, and Kurukshetra battle is over. And some number of days passed. Why it was that Bhishma Dev was still lying on the battlefield when all these other things were going on, but I've not found an answer to that question. But the funeral rites were performed for everyone, and Yudhisthira was installed as the emperor, so that took place. And here they go. Pandavas all in regal attire, along with Krishna himself, to receive Grandfather Bhishma lying. And the first parts of the chapter describe how Bhishma responded, because it wasn't just the Pandavas and Krishna, it was so many exalted personalities and great sages and rishis and so forth. And although he was incapacitated, he received them with such culture and grace that everyone was fully satisfied, pleasing words, etc. And one can only imagine how much pain his body was experiencing. Yet nonetheless, he was in full control of his faculties and full control of his etiquette. And he received everybody very, very wonderfully. And such beautiful paintings we find, particularly the BBC paintings are exquisite, but the subject of Grandfather's Bhishma's passing is depicted by artists, many, many different images. Grandfather Bhishma was thirsty, you know, from Mahabharata. So Arjuna fired an arrow in the ground and he had a drinking fountain and received water by the expertise of Arjuna serving Grandfather Bhishma. And the situation is that Yudhisthira, although he's the emperor, he's feeling extremely despondent. Before the Kurukshetra battle, he didn't want to participate, but Krishna wanted him to participate. Like Arjuna didn't want to participate, Krishna wanted him. It was Krishna's plan. But after the battle, so he went through with the plan. But after the battle, something happened. He forgot the Krishna's plan, but he wanted it to happen. And he was feeling great remorse that I'm the cause of so many persons being killed. Same as we find in chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna not wanting the responsibility for all of the wives without their husbands and children without their fathers and so forth. Parents without their sons. He didn't want that responsibility. Here's Yudhisthira feeling terribly despondent because of me, so I can sit on the throne. What a terrible person I am. And by Krishna's plan, even Krishna could not pacify Yudhisthira. And that's because Krishna wanted Bhishma to do it. So he was unable to do it, so Bhishma could do it. And we're going to be reading 7 verses and a little bit from the purports, starting with text 11. Here he is, Grandfather Bhishma. He served as the father in the absence of their father. Pandu died, so the grandfather raised them like his own children. They had affection for him, and he had affection for them like father and son. Verse, text 11 reads, the sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed.
Maharaj, we cannot hear you. Maharaj, we cannot hear you.
They should be able to hear you
now. Can you hear me now, Ramchandra?
Yes, Maharaj.
Oh. Thank technology. Okay.
Right after that translation, you went on mute.
Should I start all over again?
I think till you finish reading the translation was fine. After that, we could not hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, so, I find it very interesting that the purport is explaining he was really happy that Duryodhana lost and Yudhishthira won and Yudhishthira is now the king. Now, in one sense, it's perfectly understandable because he had enormous affection for Krishna and naturally had enormous affection for those in relation to Krishna. And those in relation to Krishna were also like his grandchildren, like his own children. So he had natural affection for them. And he was so happy to see them in royal attire. They went purposefully in royal attire because they knew that that would enliven him. And sure enough, it enlivened him to the point of tears. It says, he tried to check his tears, but he couldn't. His affection was pouring forth. Just seeing them, yay, they're now in the royal position. Long, bitter struggle. And now they're victorious. I mean, the cost was extreme, but not just so that they're victorious, now they're ruling. But the Demoniac kings were eliminated. That was Krishna's intention. And not only they were eliminated, they were liberated. They were liberated. Bad people achieve liberation. That's pretty wonderful. So he was in ecstasy. We're having some discussions in our morning classes about the residents of Vrindavan did not feel material tribulation. Now they felt tribulation, but there was no material aspect to their tribulation because whatever happened, and it will come in the course of this commentary, Prabhupada's purports also. Pure devotees only experience ecstasy even in the midst of tribulation. So the Pandavas included. We'll hear. Let's carry on. Text 12. Bhishmadev said, oh, what terrible sufferings and what terrible injustices you good souls suffer for being the sons of religion personified. You did not deserve to remain alive under those tribulations, yet you were protected by the Brahmanas, God, and religion. As repeated several times, not only this purport, but coming purports also, I'll just summarize. Tribulation comes our way also. What to do? Bhishmadev, great Mahajan, is giving instruction what to do. Here's what we should do. The tribulation is what it is. And he's going to say that you just have to accept the tribulation. Don't just become caught in the circumstance. Oh, what misfortune. Rather, look to three things. Internally, have I been conducting my life in accordance with religious principles? Second, in living my life according to religious principles, have I been guided by qualified Brahmanas and Vaishnavas? Then the third box to look and check. Theistic conduct guided by Brahmanas and Vaishnavas for the pleasure of Krishna. And if any one of those are out of alignment, go back and fix it. And if there is alignment, that is, in the case of Yudhishthira, he is religion personified, the son of Yamaraj, Dharmaraj. He's often referred to in Mahabharata as himself, Dharmaraj. And he was always guided by Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. And his whole life was dedicated to service of Krishna. So everything is in alignment, and he's letting him know. When that happens, from Srila Prabhupada's purport, as long as a person is fully in cooperation with the wishes of the Lord, guided by the bona fide Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and strictly following religious principles, one has no cause for despondency, however trying the circumstance of life. Bhishma Devas, one of the authorities in the line, wanted to impress this point upon the Pandavas and upon us also. It's worth repeating. It comes in future purports, but upcoming purports. So I'll just say it again. You're walking along the path of life and here comes a tribulation. Or 10 of them. And the circumstance is difficult. What should be your response? This is the response. Look internally and have these three things been guiding principles? If not, correct them and align them. And there's always room for improvement for us because we're less than perfect, but Yudhisthira is perfect. But for us, those are principles too. That's where your attention should go. How you're moving forward on the path of life, connecting with Krishna, under the guidance of Vaishnavas, in accordance with religious principles. That's what we should do. Tribulation comes, you do that. And make sure the alignment is in order, because whatever is coming is coming. There's nothing you can do about whatever is coming. Or your feelings in relation to what's coming, a tribulation event. Stick to those three principles. That's an important lesson in this section. So he speaks first to the Pandavas, to the sons, and then he speaks to Kunti, or about Kunti. As far as my daughter-in-law, Kunti, is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were growing up, she suffered a great deal also because of your actions. Not rubbing it in or blaming them. She's just indicating she had tribulation. The purport, very short, reads, the sufferings of Kunti Devi are doubly lamented. She suffered greatly because of early widowhood and to get her minor children brought up in the royal family. And when her children were grown up, she continued to suffer because of her son's actions. So her sufferings continued. This means, here's the punchline, this means that she was destined to suffer by providence. And this one has to tolerate without being disturbed. That wasn't bad karma. It wasn't like she did a whole bunch of simple things and so she's got some reaping the fruits of her bad karma. That's not, for us it may be, for Kunti it's not. And for a devotee, the rule, the scriptural rule is engage in devotional service and it has the power, bhakti has the power just to dissolve all karma. So if it's not karma that's the cause of the tribulation, what is it? Here's what it is. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time, under whose control everyone in every planet is carried, just as the clouds are carried by the wind. So I don't know what the weather's like there in New Jersey, but there was a big thunderstorm today here. And there's still some clouds in the sky. The sun is out, but there's a lot of clouds. And the clouds are moving by the force of the wind. So you could say, oh, the clouds are moving because of the force of the wind. But the clouds are going to keep moving because of the force of the wind. And it's inevitable. It's inexorable. It's something you can't bring about or stop. Here's a very nice purport. It's right on the topic for this evening. There is control by time all over the space within the universe, as there is control by time all over the planets. All the big, gigantic planets, including the sun, are being controlled by the force of air as the clouds are carried by the force of air. I'll explain that shortly. Similarly, the inevitable kala, or time, controls even the actions of the air and other elements. Time is a very powerful force. Everything, therefore, is controlled by the supreme kala, a forceful representative of the Lord within the material world. Thus, Yudhisthira should not be sorry for the inevitable actions of time. Everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time. As long as one is within the conditions of the material world, Yudhisthira should not think that he had committed sins in his previous birth and is suffering the consequence. Even the most pious has to suffer the conditions of material nature. But a pious man is faithful to the Lord, for he is guided, here we go again, by the bona fide Brahmana and Vaishnavas following the religious principles. Again, these three guiding principles should be the aim of life. We should not be disturbed by the tricks of eternal time. Even the great controller of the universe, Brahmaji, is also under the control of that time. Therefore, again, the punchline, one should not grudge being controlled by time, despite being a true follower of religious principles. We discussed this in a morning class the other day. One of the top 10 questions that people ask, there's different ways of asking it, but why do bad things happen to good people? Somebody I know, or I myself, or something like that, she or he is a really good person, and have so much tribulation. So why is that? And you know, it seems like bad people, they have so much enjoyment, and why is that? Why good things happen to bad people? Bad things happen. Bad things happen to everybody. Time not only destroys, time brings things into being, and time moves things along, and time dissolves all things. Inevitable time. And for Kunti, who also is not sinful, and Yudhisthira, not sinful, but time was moving events. In our lives, time moves events, without elaborating. So many different ways that things keep changing. And sometimes it looks favorable and sometimes it looks unfavorable. But for sure, things keep changing. Time keeps moving. So when time moves and some misfortune comes, in the case of the Pandavas, virtue personified, great devotees of Krishna, etc., difficulty after difficulty after difficulty after difficulty, and as he says, such difficulty, a normal person wouldn't even have been able to survive. And they're great devotees. They're not just like sadhakas. They're his eternal associates in so much tribulation. So dear to him, and they're so dear to him, and he's so dear to them. Inevitable time, moving things. So we're not on the level of the Pandavas and Queen Kunti, but we have the same advice. Time moves things. Clouds come, clouds go. This is commented that even the sun moves on the force of air. It's a detail that I learned from studying the fifth canto. But as you all know, Dhruva, at the end of his life, went to Dhruvaloka. And the Bhagavatam describes that Dhruvaloka, the place in the universe where Dhruvaloka is at the topmost region of the heavenly planets. So for the TOVP, the chandelier model, it's the heavenly planets, Bhuv, Bhuvar, and Swargaloka planets. That's the moving part of the exhibit of the TOVP, because those three planetary systems are all moving. And it's vertical direction below Dhruvaloka. Just below Dhruvaloka is the Saptarishis, the Big Dipper, or the planets of the seven rishis, and then all the other heavenly planets, etc., etc., Bhuvaraloka, and then Bhumangala, where we are. That's what you look up in the sky and you see. And everything's moving in a clockwise direction around the pole star. And the Bhagavatam describes why they're moving, besides offering their respect to this personality of God who is residing with Dhruva on Dhruvaloka. But there's ropes of air, there's a Sanskrit term, that are moving them. The ropes of air are connected to Dhruvaloka. And as Dhruvaloka is turning, there's another Sanskrit term, the wind that's pushing those ropes of air, the planets slowly, slowly move in a counterclockwise direction, movements by air. It's universal air blowing, the ropes of air blowing, and time is moving everything. The time that's moving everything is called Kala Chakra. We often hear that that's the chakra upon which the sun planet is moving, Kala Chakra. That is, that even the Kala Chakra is, that moves air, which moves all the planets. What to speak of little people like us, events that happen, it's the movements of time. On the micro and the macro scale, time is inevitable, time is moving everything. No need to lament. The clouds moving across the sky aren't going to stop because the wind is blowing them across the sky. And time is moving the wind. That's what we're hearing in this purport. So this is Grandfather Bhishma. His assignment is to pacify the heart of Yudhisthira because he's grieving. And he's grieving, blaming himself for all the loss of lives at the Kurukshetra battle. That's his assignment. So this is how he's doing it. It's very interesting. Text 15. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion? Bhima, the great fighter with a club. The great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon, Gandiva. And above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. So Krishna's there, right before them all, right in the presence of Grandfather Bhishma, he's pointing to him, at least with his eyes. There he is. And how can reverses happen in the presence of all of this? So more on the inevitable time. Despite the power of pious acts, power of personalities, the power of expert management, and the power of weapons under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses, which can only be explained as due to the influence of Kala, the inevitable time. Kala is identical with the Lord himself, and therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable wish of the Lord himself, which is in the next verse. The inexplicable wish of the Lord himself. So why would the Lord wish for his dear, beloved devotees to have so many tribulations? Sounds cruel. Sounds cruel. But it's a secret that we can express, and it remains a secret unless you're a devotee. One of those kinds of secrets. That tribulation for a devotee is an ecstasy. Now, maybe I better not be a devotee because I'm going to get ecstasy in the form of tribulation. But each time they're right at the edge and Krishna comes and rescues them. It happens in Vrindavan, and now it's happening as well as happening. It happens in Dwarka. It happens in Dwarka. Even in Krishna's presence, there's difficulty. And it's happening in Hastinapur. And in the life of his beloved devotees, the Pandavas, every time Krishna came to the rescue. Prabhupada writes, there is nothing to lament when a matter is beyond the control of any human being. This is like a transcendental lesson about accepting circumstances, the acceptance principle. There are circumstances in life that there's nothing we can do about it, any more than the clouds that are blowing in the sky. There's a big storm here today. But, you know, what are you going to do? Carry an umbrella. Or stay indoors. But, you know, it's going to be a big storm. Nothing you can do. You deal with it. You accept it. And you conduct your life. So, tribulations come in our lives. What do? You accept it. So accept it doesn't mean you don't do anything. You do something. But that's not the main function of a human being, is dealing one thing after the next of tribulation, and ordeal and circumstance and so forth. You get exhausted. And discouraged. That's not what you do. They're to be accepted, and you have the same alignment consideration. This is our Mahajan grandfather Bhishma instructing Yudhisthira to come out of his despondency. Text 16. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord Krishna, even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively. They are bewildered. And, you know, that's an important... Why things... Sometimes we want to know. We ask, why? Well, is there some lesson for me in this circumstance of life? Things seem to be going in a very strange way. We may not understand. Grandfather Bhishma is saying, great philosophers, great rishis, great personalities. Who can say what the plan of the Lord is? We may get like a thread or two, maybe. But, you know, whether we get a thread or two or not, there's some plan being carried out, and there's some service to Krishna for us And that's where his attention is turning next. That's where our attention should go. What's our service to Krishna in this circumstance? In life, in any circumstance. Oh, best among the descendants of Bharata, Yudhisthira, I maintain, therefore, that all this is within the plan of the Lord. Accepting the inconceivable plan of the Lord, you must follow it. You are now the appointed administrative head. Somebody needs you. Thank you. You are now the appointed administrative head, and my Lord, you should now take care of those subjects who are now rendered helpless. And this is our last verse, and just a quick touch on the purport. The popular saying is that a housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. Of course, in the presence of the daughter-in-law, because then she can understand it's meant for the daughter-in-law. Similarly, the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotee, and that is happening for us as well. The devotee does not have to learn anything new from the Lord, because when the Lord teaches the sincere devotee, because the Lord teaches the sincere devotee always from within. Whenever, therefore, a show is made to teach the devotee, it is for teaching the less intelligent men. A devotee's duty, therefore, is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. Tribulation, benediction. Wait a minute. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma Dev to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. The poor subjects were without protection due to the battle of Kurukshetra, and they were awaiting the assumption of power by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Punchline at the end. A pure devotee of the Lord accepts tribulations as favors of the Lord. Ooh, let's say that one again. A pure devotee, that's not us, right? Accepts tribulations as favors from the Lord. Since the Lord is absolute, there's no mundane difference between the two. Now, they may feel different. That's okay. But mercy of the Lord, favor of the Lord. Benediction from the Lord. We were discussing this morning, it's a long topic, which I'm not going to go into in detail, why Krishna didn't go back. After he took care of Kamsa and freed Vasudeva Devaki, he knew the love of the residents of Vrindavan. He felt that same love for them that they felt for him. It was his greatest happiness when he went to Vrindavan from Gokul. He was enlivened. Of course, he's the personality of Godhead. He's self-satisfied anyway, but in his own abode, Vrindavan, he was so happy with Balaram and so forth and so on. And he knows exactly their feelings. Why didn't he go back? And there's multiple reasons. We'll say some of them. You know, this is the plan of the Lord. But we can hear from our acharyas what they say. Krishna was considering, if I go back, the demons that are remaining on the planet, they'll know I have affection for the Pandavas, for the Vrijvasis. So they'll go harass them. So I can't go. I have to deal with the demons. So just then, Uddhava came to do some service. There's the solution. Uddhava, he's a perfect minister. He can go and pacify them for the time being. There's a long description of different reasons. Long description, different reasons. And Krishna had to adjust all those different reasons. But one of those reasons described by Jiva Goswami is Krishna wanted to show, he writes, just like someone may put gold in fire to show the quality of the fire, the quality of the gold. It's part of the ways, I don't know the system, part of the ways that gold is purified is by melting it, molten gold, and other alloys separate out and the gold is remaining. But when gold is pure gold, you put it in fire and it shows it's pure gold. So similarly, Krishna was showing the world the amazing intensity of love of the residents of Vrindavan, and particularly the gopis, the love of Yashoda and Nanda as well. He was showing the world something like what happened with Bali Maharaj and his tying up, Vamana tying him up. He said, showing the world this unique quality of Bali Maharaj. Or when Arjuna was put into the difficulty, when the sleeping sons of Draupadi were killed, and he captured Ashwatthama, and on one side was Draupadi saying, don't kill him, and his elder brother saying, don't kill him, and he would never disobey his elder brother, Bhima saying, kill him. Krishna saying, there's nothing, you should kill him. Don't think he's a Brahmana, and therefore there's sin in killing a Brahmana because he's not a Brahmana. What he's done is not what a Brahmana does. He's not a Brahmana by quality, from Bandhu. Kill him. No hesitation. The commentary says Krishna wants to show, just see the exalted quality of Arjuna's bhakti. He knew what Krishna wanted, and he did what Krishna wanted. Because Arjuna doesn't want to do anything other than Krishna. So, tribulation can also be for us to get the alloys out, and just this one thing remaining. Do what Krishna wants. Now that's not material life. And so to get us out of material life, there may be tribulation. But it's an ecstasy, it's kindness of Krishna to get us freed from the material entanglement. It doesn't feel comfortable when there's tribulation. But to become free from material entanglement, he wants us. We're telling him, we want to be with you. And he's helping us to come to him because we're entangled in the material contact and the complexities of material contact. It's not like, you know, become impersonalist. It's be personalist and accept the purification of engaging with the material energy exclusively for the purpose of the pleasure of Krishna. That's the life of a devotee. That's how little people, even us little people, we're not Pandavas and Queen Kunti. But Krishna is very kind to all. Krishna is very kind to the creepers and the trees and the leaves and the birds and the, you name it. Everyone is important to Krishna. He wants to reciprocate with each of us. He wants us. And we're entangled. And so Krishna's helping us become free. That's his benefits, the language here, his benediction. How to understand how he's doing it? We wouldn't plan it that way. It would look very different if we weren't Krishna. Fortunately, we're not. One of the sayings, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sayings, for so many lifetimes, I've been acting independently. This one lifetime, let me dedicate myself entirely to your service. My dear mind, instructions to the mind. You can just sit down over there, please. Because you've been in charge for so many lifetimes and you made a mess of things. So you're not in charge anymore. This one lifetime, it says dedicated to Krishna. And that dedication to Krishna that was already in the hands of the Pandavas, and specifically Yudhisthira, who is specifically the one who Krishna wanted to rule the world. That's not like blissful ruling things, but he was doing it in religious duty, and that's what Krishna wanted, and that's what he was to do. The tribulation aside, do what Krishna wants, and align yourself in these three principles and facing in inevitable time. Align yourself with these three principles. I know some people that are dealing with very serious health issues, not just pandemic issues, but and they're fearful and confused. Inevitable time. So let go of the bodily conception and accept the spiritual conception of taking shelter of Krishna. Live your life according to theistic conduct. Take guidance from the Vaishnavas and Brahmanas. Aim at pleasing Krishna with whatever you do, whatever breaths you have left, etc. Strive like that, and you'll be protected by Krishna. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. Krishna is loving and he's all powerful. Protection is there. Guaranteed. Accept the plan of the Lord. Understand as best you can under proper guidance what your duty. Carry it out with the plan of, with the aim of pleasing Krishna. That's how to deal with inevitable time when you're in the temporary world. That's where we are. We aim for the eternal world and we're living our life responsibly in the temporary world. Aim to please Krishna under proper guidance with theistic conduct. So that's the topic I wanted to discuss. Now, we're ready for Ramachandra to prompt people to ask questions.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj. If there's a question, please go ahead.
I'm hearing an echo. I don't know about you. Are you hearing an echo?
About you.
Can you hear me?
Not so well.
Okay, there is Maharaj on one question on the chat. Thank you, Maharaj, for sharing the three principles. We could take shelter of, regarding the third principle, is it just saying to Krishna, let this be pleasing to you?
Well, that's the words, and then there's the heart. So we have to align the heart. In other words, there has to be consistency, not just lip deep, but heart deep. Technology doesn't seem to be cooperating so well right now.
I think it's on there.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. I have one question.
Yes, next question, Maharaj.
Yes, please. I'm listening.
Can you hear?
Now I can hear, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Maharaj. So where I think Bhishmadeva was telling regarding the situation of Pandavas, that it is desire of Krishna that you are going to going through this, and Krishna wanted to teach the whole world through them. But isn't it like unfair for the Pandavas, like, you know, to go through that suffering or kind of thing? Like, you know, devotee, just like, you know, Prabhupada gave an example, like, you know, you teach your daughter-in-law through your daughters. But isn't it unfair for a daughter to go through that precarious condition just to, like, you know, a medium to become, like, how a devotee, like, you know, in that situation, like, they go through, like, a lot of suffering to be an, so an exemplary for them.
Well, it's not, that's not 100% of the picture. When the Pandavas were undergoing tribulation, it wasn't only so they could be the guinea pig or the ones through whom Krishna was instructing. There was the situation of they're feeling out on a limb and they hearing the limb crack and Krishna comes to the rescue. There's this nice, two examples of that come to mind. One example is when Draupadi was being disrobed, she finally raised two arms saying, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda," and Krishna came. So there's this, it's not in the Mahabharata, somebody was describing. Later, Draupadi has a conversation with Krishna saying, "Krishna, why did you come?" And Krishna's reply was, "Well, you were defending yourself. You were holding on to your sari and, you know, using your own strength. But when you took full shelter of me, I was there immediately." So devotee tribulation can sometimes be Krishna helping us to take full shelter of him. In the story of Prahlad Maharaj, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a similar comparison. When Prahlad was being pushed off a cliff and there was a free fall heading for the jagged rocks below, Lord Vishnu didn't show himself right away. He was examining, what's he going to do? So the protection was already there, but Prahlad didn't scream or panic or cry. He felt certain that the Lord would protect him, and surely the Lord protected him, because that was his faith. Now, we're not to imitate Prahlad Maharaj or any other great personality. It's just describing a principle. That ordeal can sometimes be helping us to become more dependent upon the Supreme Lord. Like, let me just describe, the gopis were without Krishna's association. Krishna wanted to show the exalted nature of their love to the world. And, you know, it was increasing their attachment to him through separation. So, not only just being, role models to teach other people, and how does that feel if you're being, because they have a relationship with Krishna, and that relationship with Krishna is being intensified by that exchange with him. That's what they're feeling, and therefore for them it's a benediction. It's a blessing, it's his mercy, it's his kindness. And once again, those who aren't devotees can't think like that. And those that are devotees think like that. There's no resentment. There's no, "Hey, wait a minute. Why is this bad thing happening? I'm a good devotee." That's not how a devotee thinks. A pure devotee thinks. Are we still connected?
Yes, one
thing. Okay, does this mean? Any other questions and comments from the audience?
the next question, the chat room is, bhakti has the power to dissolve karma.
Yes.
How about the neophyte devotee who just practices little service? Will they be qualified to dissolve their karma as well?
Yes. Well, it's not that they're qualified, but bhakti has that power. Bhakti can dissolve their karma. Bhakti has that power. Just like light dispels darkness. So supposing you're in a really dark place, are you qualified to have light dispel darkness? Yes, because light dispels darkness. It's the qualification of the light, not the qualification of the dark place.
There's a follow-up on the previous question on the three principles. Thank you, Maharaj, for your clarification on my previous question. Regarding those three principles you shared, if first two are followed, the third one automatically gets fulfilled. Is that understanding correct?
No. So I can follow rules and I can follow directions of those, the person's guiding, but my intention may be something else. Intention is to please the Supreme Lord. So you could say, if my intention to please the Supreme Lord, then the other two will follow. But you know, somebody may have a sentiment to follow the Supreme Lord and deviate. And keep deviating. In other words, deluding themselves about pleasing the Lord. So the person that wants to please the Lord. All three have to be there, in short. Check all three, not just two of them.
Gopal, go in, Prabhu. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for giving your time and association on this class. Am I audible?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So Maharaj, on text 17, you mentioned that pure devotee takes the full protection of the Krishna, trust on the full protection of the Krishna. How about the neophyte or the beginner, as an education point, I can take that fact, but to meditate on it and practice it, it's kind of hard. It's like a little tadpole swimming in the water and living on the protection of the Krishna, but very rare chance to survive.
I'm not clear what your question is.
So, maybe. Okay, I'll rephrase. My question is that the protection of the Krishna, pure devotees follow the protection of the Krishna, but...
Pure devotees follow the protection of Krishna, yes.
Right, so for the beginners, the same principle applies. However, it's very hard to practice it. Very
yeah.
hard follow that there's a full protection of Krishna. We get shaken by the events happening around us. So how do we practice it?
How do you practice? Well, you practice by practicing. Meaning, it's a little, my thoughts are going to Prabhupada's example of a little child learning to walk. Because walking propensity is within the child, by practicing and practicing and practicing, that which is already within them comes out. So in the case of walking, it's motor skills. But in case of practicing depending upon Krishna, it's something more subtle, but it's something, if you understand what it is, you keep practicing and practicing. And good association, good guidance is also important. Good association and good guidance is also important. So it's keeping good association that will help you with your practice. And be mindful, this, you know, popular word these days, be mindful of what it looks like. What it looks like is I'm targeting my life towards relying upon Krishna, because the reality is I'm dependent. So I'm relying upon him to get from where I want to go, from where I am to where I want to go. I'll give a really practical suggestion in response to your question. Practice chanting attentively. And when you really try to practice attentively, you'll reach the following conclusion. I can't do this on my own. Help! So there's effort and there's mercy, and that's how you practice. You make sincere effort in the direction you want to move in, and you recognize, I need Krishna's mercy to achieve that. That's how to practice. So start with practicing chanting attentively, and then the question you're raising becomes easier to understand how to practice.
Thank you, Maharaj.
That's a different kind of an answer, isn't it?
It's kind of, yeah.
Throw it back in your lap. This is a spiritual solution to a material problem. That's the point.
Maharaj, the next question in the chat room is, if a person faces tribulations one after another, how can one maintain firm faith and determination in Krishna's plans? Any practical ways you can suggest?
Association of devotees. Association of sincere devotees. And I know people that have exactly that, you know, portfolio of tribulation after tribulation. The real, you know, the real ones are not just, you know, imagined ones. And what has helped them endure is coming to the conclusion, because that seems to me the least what Krishna wants, coming to the conclusion that I'm fully dependent upon Krishna. Tried this and that and the other thing, and this arrangement, that arrangement, the other thing, and nothing, it just keeps happening. I'm fully dependent upon Krishna. Now, so there's not resentment. These are people, to be successful, if you become resentful, you lose. I mean, you're in Maya. You're in the darker regions of illusion. But to go towards light, it's, I'm truly dependent. And your arms are up in the air, reaching for, like a child reaching for mother. The child reaching for mother is dependent upon mother. And that's, if the mother isn't merciful, the child just keeps reaching their arms. But fortunately for us, Krishna is merciful. And then one feels the safety and security and protection of Krishna. So that's, you know, it's not easy to reach that state, but when tribulation comes again and again and again and again and again and again, what keeps you going is that realization. It's actual shelter in Krishna. And that's what Krishna wanted. That's what Krishna wants. And if we have so many other shelters, we're just kind of like going along half speed or quarter speed. That's not what Krishna wants. He doesn't interfere, but if we're sincere, tribulations may keep coming. And if there's a break, that's Krishna's mercy. If there isn't, it's Krishna's mercy. So it's good association and coming to the place of real shelter, shelter in Krishna, not in the circumstances that look like happiness. That's what I want instead of the other ones. So it takes strong Krishna consciousness, then association with devotees, and strong hearing and chanting.
Thank you, Maharaj. I have a question.
Yeah, for me, it's the medicine that gets on the other side of anything of the material contact is Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhavo sada shrotramano biramat. So try some of that on a regular basis, like, you know, deeply dive into the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam and it lifts you up. You feel that connection, you feel the, whatever the tribulation is or tribulations are and the series of them, you're in Krishna's shelter. For me, that works. And chanting, of course. So go ahead, Ramchandra.
Yes, Maharaj, from verse number 17 that you read, the purport, it says there the Pandavas were advised by Bhishma, a devotee's duty therefore is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. The Pandavas were advised by Bhishma Dev to accept the responsibility of administration without hesitation. Now in our practical life, when tribulation comes, and I'm only talking about practicing initiated devotees, the first thing they do, or not everybody, some of them, is give up their responsibilities of administration or their services. Now, when that happens, what should be done? Like, as another leader, should we shake them, wake them, and have them take that up again, or let them just go into their caves?
It depends on the person, their circumstance, their association, their strength, their resiliency, their other relationships and connections. So there's a lot of variables. You know, there are different options that you can take as a response. I have found, you have to look at the person. Sometimes people just need space and take, you know, two or three deep breaths and they're ready to move forward. And some people need much longer period of time. So the answer to your question is it so much depends upon the relationships that you have with that person and that person has with other persons. And you look at the holistic picture, and one of the options is what you said. You know, stand and fight. But if you can access their heart, if they're open their heart and see what's inside, if they're in touch with what's inside, you can touch what's inside, then there may be a need that they need to take care of, not just get back into some service. So that's not easy to do, but that's ideal. Okay. Are we finished up here?
Any other questions, anybody? There's one more question. And let me just clarify that question. I'm not clear on it. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada.
Thank you.
Jai.
Jai.